Journalism and Women in Tech.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lorien. Well, coming up today, we're going to hear an interview with a local Native American author, Gabriel Horn. He's going to be on for the next half hour here on WMNF. And as we listen to this interview, you're welcome to email in your comments. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Gabe is a celebrated author. He's also been a teacher. He's been affiliated with the American Indian Movement. We'll hear more about him in just a moment. And then later on in this program, we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. This is WMNF in Tampa. This interview comes to us from my television program, Florida This Week. Recently, WEDU and PBS carried the documentary series Native America. It looked at Native Americans' massive construction projects and contributions to modern agriculture, land management, and the foundations of our democracy. Much of these contributions forgotten by modern society. We're going to talk with one of Florida's most celebrated American Indian authors about some of this long-forgotten history on a special edition of Florida This Week. Welcome back. Our guest is award-winning author and teacher Gabriel Horn. Gabe has been a teacher for most of the last five decades. He's taught on reservations at American Indian Movement survival schools, colleges, including St. Petersburg College and universities. His books include Native Heart and Motherless. He's performed at the Kennedy Center, and some of his writing was contained in a compilation given as a gift from President George H.W. Bush to the Queen of England. Gabe, welcome to WEDU. Great to have you here.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
In that documentary, Native America, they talked about how much indigenous knowledge is lost and how the Europeans, when they came here, dismissed anything, almost anything, that the indigenous people knew about. And now we're trying to reconnect with that. We're trying to find out what we lost. How much do you think we've lost?
Oh. Thousands of years, tens of thousands of years have been lost, but some of it's been retained and some of it's been held in the books like the Aztecs and the Mayans and in the people's way of keeping history alive. But it's, I think of what I know is what I was taught and what I learned, but it's a fragment, you know, but it's still here. Mm-hmm. And it has to be, because if it ceases to be here, that philosophy ceases to be here anymore, that will be the end. And so a purpose in life then has to be to pass that on, whether it's to your children or your grandchildren or whenever opportunities you have to pass that information on that you've been taught, that wisdom that you've been taught, with the hopes that, you know, it will stay alive. And that's one of the reasons, the main reason why I write.
Mm-hmm. So how is it? How is it preserved? Is it preserved just through the stories that are handed down from generation to generation? How does that indigenous knowledge get handed across?
I think through the series, which is just a fabulous series, a wonderful, so well done, that series, Native America. The Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois, show you how the wampum was used in passing down information, and the Lakota had ways of passing it down. The Comanche had ways, even when they took us out to the rocks and we saw what somebody had left us to understand 100 years later, 300 years later, 400 years later. So it's passed, and it's passed down. Much of what I know was passed on to me through my dear uncles and my godmother and the elders that I met along the way, and it all made sense. And I thought, this is so beautiful, it can't die with them. And I think they chose to share it with me because I think they saw me as a vessel, you know, the next vessel to carry it. And I honored that as best I could. And so I think it's different in different places. It's through stories, it's through songs, it's through dance.
The Europeans understood the land much differently than the native people here. The native people here, the indigenous people, had a different relationship with the land, with the continent, than the Europeans brought over.
Still do. It's so different. We see the result of what was transplanted from Europe to here. We see the result of that mentality on the land, on the world. To be indigenous, to be Indian means you are aware of the Mother Earth. You are aware of our mother as a female entity, and that she is alive, and we are the ones privileged to be on her, and that there is a respect that has to go with that, and a gratitude that has to go with that for what she's provided us. So to see the violation of her through mining and drilling and the pollution that comes as a result of that, we were talking about the violation of the body through the oil wells that indigenous people, it was beyond the comprehension to do that to her body. Because we know that when we're scratched, we can get a scab and heal, the earth will heal. But to puncture her deep inside of her, then the antibodies get released just like they would if we were punctured, and the danger of damaging the body. Mm-hmm. And so that philosophy is real. That's how we see the world. That's how we walk every day in that way. And to see the garbage and the dead fish and all the results of the tossing, the flicking of butts, cigarette butts, something as simple as that. It's just a not awareness and a consciousness of where we are and how blessed we are to be on this planet.
A lot of terms are used to describe indigenous people. Do you favor one over another?
Personally, I prefer, at this point in my life, I prefer indigenous because I feel more as an indigenous man of this earth. I am of this earth, my mother. And I feel a connection to indigenous peoples all over this hemisphere and all over the world. And I think some have this connection because we all share basically this, if anything, this concept of earth as alive and living and female and mother. And so we have a bond there, a mutual. So I prefer indigenous at this point in my life, but it's up to each individual. Native American implies native, you know, the idea of being native of this earth. Indian has been around since Columbus. And there are people in South America, Mexico, in this country that prefer that. And we can understand why. I think it's a personal choice. And I'm not to judge somebody by how they refer to themselves.
What do you think of the current debate we're having about immigration? As somebody who's, you're part of the First Nation, you're part of the indigenous nation here. What do you think, we're having a debate almost nightly on cable TV and here on PBS and elsewhere in the press about immigration. What are your thoughts about it?
I'm a member of the family of Princess Redwing, Nipawanik, and Metacomet, the Narragansett tribe, Wampanoag Nation. That was my family. So the stories I heard go from way back, from the greeting of the time the pilgrims arrived, and I know just a smidgen, but I know it from especially Redwing's point of view. And you can imagine if indigenous people had treated the first arrivals from Europe the way the United States is treating people immigrating, I read an Indian author the other day, and she wrote that immigration is not the issue. The issue is white supremacy. And when I see, when I'm watching with my life companion, and we're watching these, they're indigenous people. They're Indians, they're indigenous
the people.
People
that are coming from Guatemala and Honduras.
They're indigenous of this hemisphere. And we wonder sometimes if it doesn't trigger some subconscious or unconscious fear that we took something that didn't belong to us. We never made restitution for it, or even acknowledged it. They're coming back for it, or somebody's going to be coming back for it. And there they are. Now, I don't know if these people consider themselves indigenous or Indians or Catholics, or, but what we see, what I see, is indigenous people. And from the indigenous people that I know that have come to this country, they consider themselves, you know, the ones that I know personally, as Mayan or Aztec. They sat in our home, you know, and we've had ceremonies with them. They haven't lost that connection. So it's about keeping brown people, you know, out. And it's a tremendous hypocrisy in the United States. You know that as well as I do. When you have the Statue of Liberty there, you know, it's not down in the border of New Mexico. But we understand what's going on. We see what's going on. And it seems as always before the white man came here, there was migrations. There was immigrations and migrations all over, and tribal mixing and marriages and things happening. So it wasn't unusual. And maybe, who knows, maybe it is a sign, you know, that you can't take something that doesn't belong to you. And you can lock yourself in your house to protect your goods, but they always say if they want a way in, you can't lock out yourself, ourselves in.
One of the big themes of the documentary Native America is about that indigenous knowledge that was lost. We talked about it a moment ago, but just things that we need right now: forest management. Indians knew how to manage forests.
They showed it in the documentary really well. Yes, they knew. Here's an anecdotal story. After one of the hurricanes, it was in 2004, I believe, the Myakka River had gone way over its crest, and there were people on their roofs, and they were rescuing people on the roofs. But this gives you an idea. There was a man on the roof, and he was being interviewed by a journalist. And he said, you know, if I had known Myakka was an Indian word for high water, I wouldn't have moved here. That comes from ancient knowledge. That comes from ancient wisdom. That's the kind they understood the land. They understood her, and the tribes that you could see it in the documentary. These people understood the land, and they understand the land. And Tecumseh, he saw what was happening. Metacama saw that what was happening. They what was going to happen to the Mississippi. They understood. That's why they fought so hard to protect, mm-hmm. you know, what they could.
As you travel around Florida, there are many Indian middens, although they're not really well recognized. Some are protected, some are not. Mm-hmm. But they always seem to be in very safe places. They don't seem to be threatened by rising rivers or rising oceans.
Yes. For a period of time, I lived in Safety Harbor, where they have the Great Mound up there. I felt very safe there.
Mm-hmm. Because that knowledge goes back hundreds, maybe thousands of years.
Thousands, tens of thousands of years. You know, they always try to limit. They don't want to stretch that occupation of Native Americans back too far. But there are archaeologists that will go back. Louis Leakey took Native Americans back over 100,000 years. You know,
the documentary makes a strong point that the Europeans that came here didn't really understand democracy, and it took their study and their interaction with the Iroquois nation to understand what democracy was all about.
Yeah. And when Canasatego was talking to the governors or the gathering of the colonists, he said, whatever befalls you, and they were being instructed on this, whatever befalls you, do not fall out with one another. But the whole system of checks and balances was taken from the Iroquois. And that has been acknowledged now in 1988. I think they passed a bill that gave acknowledgement to the Iroquois for the modeling of the Constitution. But they took excerpts. It's like, I like to go by the Ten Commandments, but I'm not going to take that one because that's a little too difficult. And I'll pick and choose one of the commandments that I want, and then I'll call myself a Christian or whatever, and I'll take those commandments. It's like they took the concept of the government of democracy. They didn't have that anyplace else in the world, mm-hmm. and what they didn't take was something as simple as the women had power. It was the women that chose the male leadership. So the male was given authority, but it was given to him by the women, and the women could take it away. So the women were empowered. And if we think of the land America, the actual country, it's herself here, how much influence, just living. Think of where the women's movement started. It started here, I think, because of tens of thousands of years or thousands of years or hundreds of years of living with this concept of women being equal, that it's influenced this whole movement. And I think it is the earth speaking to the people, that women are to be held sacred, women are to be respected. What's happening to indigenous women now, the missing native women in this country and in Canada is horrific. It's incredible.
And we still don't understand why so many native women are disappearing.
Yes. Well, murder. Who knows? Yeah. I'm saying...
The other thing the Europeans didn't get when they got here was that a lot of these rights were not extended to everybody. They were extended to the white male property owners,
yes,
in addition to excluding women.
All men are created equal. All men who own property, white men who own property, are created equal. That meant all the other men, that didn't include them either. So it left out...
What do you think it says that Indians saw the need for equality for everybody early on, sometime in the distant past, they came to that conclusion?
Well, I think if you have the concept from the beginning, and where does it come from? The earth. If we have the concept that the earth is our mother, then right away, who is the empowerment? It's the female that has given us life, that has given us birth. We come from her, and we will go back to her. So she taught us this. Living with her, observing, living with her, had to have been the great teacher of that. If you look at parts of the world, especially where women are abused, or you look at the land. It is a connection between the abuse of women or the treatment of women and how it affects the land itself. And I've done that. I've looked where women are most oppressed, you know, and I've seen pictures of the land where they live. And I really feel there's a direct correlation. And if you look at the abuse of this land, look at the attitudes of women in this country. Maybe it's changing, but as it has been for so long, if we look at the attitudes of women in this country toward what Europeans brought here and Americans then perpetuated, we can see that the earth is being poisoned everywhere. The waters are being poisoned. The forest. The treatment of the land. So in not acknowledging that power, not respecting that power, it's just passed on. There was no male God that was the creator of the universe for indigenous peoples that I know of. So there was no male authority, which everything is a part of a totality, a wholeness, a completeness that in translation I was taught is the best way, is called the great mystery.
You're listening to an interview with Gabriel Horn, the celebrated American Indian author. His books include Native Heart and Motherless. He's a former teacher at St. Pete College and also at the Ames Survival Schools. This is WMNF in Tampa, and this program comes to us from Florida This Week, which is a PBS show broadcast on WEDU-TV. Here's more Gabriel Horn.
Because it's incomprehensible. We're not able to comprehend it, but we are a part of it. So once we take that away from our, once the missionaries begin to take that away from us as people, and we're limited to a male authority figure made in the image of, you can see where the attitude then is passed down to male superiority. And that's what I feel is a big contribution.
Did the indigenous nations, though, did they fight against each other before the arrival of the Europeans? And how did they solve those conflicts?
I think that, again, in the Iroquois, the Haudenosaunee pointed that out, that there was killing among the tribes, there was killing among the nations, and it had to stop. Warfare had to stop. It's not good for anybody. Yeah. But people would evolve, realize this, and the peacemaker arrived. And unlike what happened to Christ, who was also called the peacemaker, they listened to him and formed the great peace out of that.
Do you view being a Native American or an indigenous person as a religion, or do you view it as an ethnic or racial identity, or how do you view being an indigenous person?
This would have to be a personal, because I don't think the government has ever known how to define Indian. And again, I look at it as it's a way of life. It's Indian here. It can't be broken up into percents of blood and blood into blood quantums like they often do now at the federal breaking, you know, quarter or eighth. It's in here. It doesn't come from how you look. It doesn't come from the color of your eyes or your hair. It comes from how you live and how you see the world. That's how I see it. And others may disagree, but that's I can look at the past, or I can read of the past and understand that. When LaDonna Harris once said that when the Comanche took in somebody, they became Comanche. They weren't part this and part that. They were Comanche. And that's the idea, that you either are or you're not. So when we're broken up into I'm quarter Indian, or I'm eighth Indian, or I'm 1/64th Indian, or even when Elizabeth Warren, what happened with her and the horrible things that were said about her, so she did her DNA test and proved it. I would celebrate anyone, especially in her position, who acknowledges that, who is not ashamed of it or is not afraid to say that, because she can do some good. She can do maybe for the earth or for the peoples, the native peoples. If a Jew is a Jew, they can be a Jew anywhere in the world. What makes that person, whether a woman or a man, a Jew, is their beliefs. Like I mentioned, there are African tribes. When we were talking earlier, the famous person, Sammy Davis Jr., who became a Jew, and he was African American. How do we define it? Do you just say I'm half Jewish or I'm a quarter Jewish? I don't understand that. It's if you convert to Catholicism and you're Jewish, then I would think you'd be Catholic with Jewish ancestry. Mm-hmm. So I look at that as well. Now this is what I was taught. So I get people upset, but if a person is Lakota, if a person is Cherokee, or Seminole, or Onondaga, that's their way of life. And they have that concept of Wakantanka, the great mystery. And once that's changed, and you know, we convert to a male dominating god who said, you know, to subdue the earth, we begin to change our whole philosophy. And then we go from mainly a matrilineal peoples that I know of. I'm sure there are exceptions. But generally speaking, matrilineal societies over to patriarchal, which is male-dominated. It's a total flip-flop.
And it wouldn't be consistent with...
It's not consistent living. Any more than drilling into the earth.
We're down to the last couple of minutes. I want to ask you about something that an elder told you from Colombia about needing to have a purpose in life.
You mean the word Iquashanduna?
Yeah.
This is a mamo that was a very respected man because of what he had acquired through his knowledge. Before he died, he tells the story of the earth telling him, Mother Earth told him, taught him this word, Iquashanduna. And the idea, as he understood it, the concept of it, was as it's incantated, Iquashanduna, Iquashanduna. You release the negativity in you, all the things that are attached to that, and you begin to attract the positivity to you. And once that begins to happen to you, it reflects then into your environment. And so where we live, we begin it with ourselves, and then it reflects out into the world, and even into our immediate homes. And I said our home has just got birds on the roof and squirrels running up and down the trees, and life is abundant around our home.
You do this incantation in your backyard?
Of course. I do it in the house with my drum.
Because it draws positive energy towards your...
Yes, and releases the negative. And you don't want to have that kind of influence, negative influence on the world and on your environment. Mm. We have to respect our environment. We have no choice. The earth will survive us.
And it's important to have a purpose in life to stick to it.
The idea is that in this, what I was taught is every nation, now it could be exceptions, especially among men, young men, had to go out and through denial of the physical, had to prepare for their vision. And in that, you receive your purpose, either through the dream state or a visionary state. You receive your understanding of what you're supposed to do with your life, how you're supposed to contribute to your life. Without that, you have no purpose. What is your purpose? And when we think, look at the purpose, what purpose do we serve in the society as men, even? Are we perpetuating goodness? Are we contributing? So you see a society that we live around where there are is without purpose. There's so many men without it, and unfortunately, that's a void.
Gabe, we were honored to have you here. Thank you for coming by WEDU.
I appreciate it. And again, I'm honored to be here.
It's great to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. I understand that there were sound problems on Friday night, but the Sunday rebroadcast, I think, was okay. Well, Gabe Horn was my guest on that TV show. He is a veteran teacher. He's taught at St. Pete College. He was also part of the AIM Survival Schools movement. And his books include Native Heart and Motherless. And several people have called in and emailed about the show. I'll just read some of these emails. John says, great job from both of you, writes John in Bradenton. And Mike says this, I just wanted to share my thoughts about this day. It seems our Department of Defense, Mike is actually writing about Memorial Day, says it seems our Department of Defense is just doing the dirty work for corporations like Exxon and Lockheed under cover of liberty and freedom. I feel it stems from a failing of human nature than on any individual. If somehow we could get a conscious and self-awareness of what are the important values, I welcome the force of change, writes Mike. That's part of his email. And then Peter, getting back to the topic of Gabriel Horn, Peter says, there may be some truth to living in areas where the coastline seems to be immune to devastation, like your guest this morning is saying, passed down from hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years, via American Indians. That's Pete writing from what he calls the safety zone, Indian Shores. Well, okay, let's hope the hurricane doesn't hit Indian Shores or anywhere else here in the Tampa Bay area, Pete. And then Tina writes this, indigenous folks in this hemisphere migrated here from Asia. They migrated from Africa. They were this hemisphere's first immigrants, all one, one love. We're all connected. We're all African, writes Tina. Everything is connected, she says, and goes on to say, and early peoples of almost all cultures understood this to the point of having other species in their realm of what most people now call God. Example, having spirit animals in all the animism religions around the world, pre-Christian, pre-Islam, pre-Judaism, pre-Hinduism, pre-Buddhism. Thanks so much for this, and the incalculable thanks to your eminently honorable guest, Gabriel Horn, writes Tina, who's in Brooksville. Well, we can open up the phone lines right now, or we can play some music. Your choice. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Today is Memorial Day, and there are some great songs written to honor Memorial Day. I figured that we could play a few of them if folks would like to hear some songs. Frank Knox is still hanging around. He'll be here for another 20 minutes answering the phone. So if there's something you want to bring up, you can call us at 813-239-9663. But in the meantime, let's hear some music. This is Loretta Lynn doing Dear Uncle Sam right here on WMNF in Tampa.
Dear Uncle Sam, I know you're a busy man, and tonight I write to you Sam, I just got your telegram, and I can't believe that this is me, shaken like I am. For it said, I'm sorry to inform you.
Dear Uncle Sam, performed by Loretta Lynn, recorded at the height of the Vietnam War. Powerful song about soldiers and families. This is WMNF in Tampa. We're going to play some more Memorial Day songs. Here's Bill Withers and a song called I Can't Write Left-Handed.
We recorded this song on October the 6th. Since then, the war has been declared over. If you're like me, you'll remember it like anybody remembers any war. One big drag. A lot of people write songs about wars and government. Very social things. But I think about young guys who were like I was when I was young. I had no more idea about any government or political things or anything. And I think about those kind of young guys now who all of a sudden somebody comes up and they're very law-abiding. So if somebody says go, they don't ask any questions, they just go. And I can remember not too long ago seeing a young guy with his right arm gone. Just got back. And I asked him how he was doing. He said he was doing all right now, but he had thought he was gonna die. He said getting shot at didn't bother him. It was getting shot that shook him up. And I tried to put myself in his position. Maybe he cried. Maybe he said, I can't write left-handed. Would you please write a letter to my mother? Tell her to tell, tell her to tell, tell her to tell her family lawyer. Trying to get a deferment for my younger brother. Tell the Reverend Harris to pray for me, Lord, Lord, Lord. I don't believe I'm gonna live to get much older. Strange little man over here in Vietnam. I ain't never seen. Bless his heart, I ain't never done nothing to. He done shot me in my shoulder. You know we talked about fighting, fighting every day. And looking through rosy and rosy colored glasses. I must admit it seemed exciting. In a way, yeah, but something that they overlooked to tell me, Lord. Bullets look better, I must say. Older.
shot me in my shoulder.
Bill Withers with a song called I Can't Write Left-Handed, also written during the Vietnam War years. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're playing some songs to mark Memorial Day. Here's Bob Dylan, Masters of War, right here on 88.5 FM. Well, maybe we'll just play that in just a moment. We're going to play Curtis Mayfield next. We Gotta Have Peace here on the Radioactivity on WMNF.
To keep the world alive and walk the seas. We got to have joy. True in our hearts, with strength we can't destroy. People hear us through our voice. The world knows there's no choice. We're making safe the children.
Masters of war, you that build the big guns, you that build the death planes, you that build all the bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind discs, I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but built to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain. Like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire. And then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world. A voice threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know? But to talk out of turn, you might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. But there's one thing I know, I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Or will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed. And I stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.
Well, now, you don't have to sing on this song if you don't want to. If you like the idea, though, you can help me out.
If you love your Uncle Sam, bring him home, bring him home. Support our boys in Vietnam. Bring 'em home, bring 'em home. It'll make our generals sad, I know. Bring 'em home, bring 'em home. They want to tangle with the foe. Bring 'em home, bring 'em home. Here is their big fallacy. Bring 'em home, bring 'em home. They don't have the right weaponry. Bring 'em home, bring 'em home. The world's got hunger and ignorance. Bring 'em home, bring 'em home. You can't beat that with all.
sing this song. Bring them home, bring them home. Now there's one thing I will confess. Bring them home, bring them home. I'm not really a pacifist. Bring them home, bring them home. If an army invaded this land of mine, bring them home.
Pete Seeger on the Johnny Cash Show years and years ago doing Bring 'Em Home. Curtis Mayfield before that. We got to have peace. Bob Dylan, Masters of War. Well, you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. We're going to go out with Freda Payne's great song, Bring the Boys Home. You know, there are still U.S. wars going on all around the world, even though they don't get much coverage. So maybe these songs about bringing them home still make sense. I'm Rob Lori. This is WMNF in Tampa. The news coming up in just about 3 minutes. This is WMNF in Tampa.